Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the LFC Red Poets podcast. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and tonight I'm joined by my partners in crime, Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton. Right, we've got a busy show coming up, so we'll start right away with the sad news we hear today of the passing of Larry Lloyd. Larry was a player that Liverpool signed for £50,000 under Bill Shankly in 1969. And he went on to make over 200 appearances for Liverpool. I was an integral part of the great second great Shankly team that was built by Bill. He helped Liverpool win the league and the UEFA Cup in 1973. And then he lost his place through injury in 1974 and never regained his place and was sold to Coventry City for £240,000 at the start of the 74-75 season. So, Tom, what's your memory as a big Larry?
Oh, he was a good player, Les, was he? Do you know, there's a great word to describe him, uncompromising. You know, like, he was like... But you know what? The three of us have had this kind of little conversation, haven't we? All three of us have seen recently footage of the 1971 semi-final at Old Trafford, the game that we were at, like, do you know what? You're watching the highlights of that game and some parts of that game. Jesus Christ, he was a fair old footballer, wasn't he? You know, like, he could actually play a bit. And, like, watching it, I was surprised by how talented he was, you know. So he was a great player, scored a great goal in the UEFA Cup final as well, didn't he? You know, which actually turned out to be, you know, the winning goal if we look back.
Yeah, so, it's funny you should mention that 71 semi-final, because if anybody's got YouTube, there's actually two small highlight packages on there. There's one in black and white, and there's one in colour. And if you click on the black and white one, Liverpool have a perfectly good goal disallowed. Ian Callaghan scores when in the first half, and Liverpool are losing 1-0 at the time. And there's a few players sort of going up, complaining to the referee. And next thing, big Larry appears from nowhere. And in today's game, he would have not only been sent off, but he'd have been banned for about 6 months. But he comes up, pushes Emily Hughes out the way, and then pushes the referee. And the referee didn't even book him. He just told him to go away. So the things used to be able to get away with back in the day. So, Pete, your memory is a big Larry.
First of all, he's got a name like a film star. His proper name is Lawrence Valentine Lloyd. So there's a name for you. He didn't really suit that name because, as Tom said, he was a bit of a stopper. But he was a footballer as well. He wasn't just an out-and-out stopper. But I wouldn't have fancied coming up against Larry Lloyd. He was uncompromising in the tackle, wasn't he? But like you say, he was brought in after the cull, if you want, when Shanks decided to break up that side when we lost to Watford in the cup. And I think he partnered Tommy Smith for the early part when he came into the first team fold. And I think he played, if memory serves me right, I think he played in the cup final against Arsenal when we lost 2-1 to Arsenal.
Yeah. But, I'm just cutting in there a little bit, Pete. I'll come back to you in a second. But I watched that game, you know, a few years ago now, back, because it was, obviously, it was a game that broke my heart. And just one day, I just thought, I'd like to watch that game. And I've got all the cup finals from the 70s on DVD. So I put the game on. And when I watched that game back, Larry Lloyd was Liverpool's man of the match that day. He had a superb game that day. And, you know, it really sort of stoked the memory as to what a really good centre-half he was. He wasn't blessed with the greatest of pace, but he was a really old-fashioned type centre-back, as you said, uncompromising, you know, wouldn't take any prisoners, give everything every game. And he was a worthy, you know, successor to Ron Yates, wasn't he, Pete?
Yeah. And then, like you say, you know, he had a good career at Liverpool. And then I think he had an injury towards the end of Shanks's management. And I think when Bob Paisley took over, I think Bob Paisley preferred Phil Thompson at that position. And then he obviously was moved on to Coventry. But one of the things you can say about Larry Lloyd, there's not many players who leave Liverpool who go on to, I wouldn't necessarily say greater things, but go on to have a successful career. And he's one of them because obviously further down the line he went to Forest.
He was brilliant at Forest, Pete, wasn't he?
And he won a
With Kenny
championship and
Burns.
two European Cups as well. So, you can put McManaman in that bracket, that bracket. Stephen McManaman left and he look what he did at Real Madrid. But you look at the number of players who left Liverpool, and there's very, very few that go on to, as I say, not necessarily greater things, but certainly successful things. And Larry Lloyd was one of
Yeah,
them.
he even played for England as well, didn't he, Pete, after he left Liverpool and went to Forest? He got an England comeback. So, it just proved what a really, it's amazing, isn't it, how, a player who doesn't fit into the system how one manager wants to play can go to another team with the right manager and the right setup and show what a really good player he was. I mean, what you said there about, about his time at Forest, and we said he was an uncompromising centre back, but Brian Clough paired him with Kenneth Burns. Now, they both kicked anything that moved, didn't he? You
But
know what I
you know
mean?
what though, Les? I think
Use
you
their
know
own
what
players, I think.
suited him. You know what suited him? Clough played deep, didn't he? He
Yeah.
played his defence at the edge of the box. So like he was not a centre half that was going to do a lot of, running with the ball. So he defended deep. So that game suited him. So he adjusted with Kenny Burns, because as you say, Kenny Burns was neither blessed with pace, but like you never went past him.
No, you
Like
did go past him.
you didn't go past. He come from Birmingham. He come from Birmingham, and like that was one of the things he said. Like he was your archetypal stopper. No, what he reminded me of. I was thinking of like when you were talking. There was two centre halves who reminded me of Kenny Burns and Larry Lloyd. David Webb was one, and Siopa Harris was the other one. Like it was like you come up to that line and you weren't passing, and to our cost.
Well, if you think about it, Tommy Smith and Larry Lloyd would have the
Yeah.
same. And
Yeah.
I think that's where Brian Clough probably got his sort of inspiration, if you like, to sign Larry Lloyd, Pete, when he thought, right, got Kenny Burns, got Larry Lloyd, and he can do, they'll be as fearsome together as what Tommy Smith was and Larry Lloyd. And
Yeah.
Liverpool have gone more to like, two ball playing centre backs, hadn't he, in Emlyn and Tomo. You know what I mean?
I think it's been said, hasn't it, Les, that when the likes of Phil Thompson and even to a point Emlyn Hughes and people like that come in the team, we were more of a footballing team throughout. You look at some of the teams in that era, Leeds United, they had Hunter and Charlton.
Yeah.
Neither of them were blessed as footballers, but bloody hell, you couldn't get past them. By fair
No.
means or foul, they'd stop you. And the other thing I was going to mention is when the younger generation, shall I say, today look at transfers, they want all these multi-million pound players coming in. He came from Bristol Rovers, but
Yeah.
then you don't see that anymore. And then you look at some of the other players who were in the team or in the, around that era. Emlyn Hughes from Blackpool,
Yeah.
Ray Clements, Kevin Keegan, they were all from like the lower divisions, and it's unheard of now. And it just shows you what an eye that that Shanks, Paisley, and the scouting system at Liverpool had. They could see the potential in these players that were playing in lower divisions,
When you think, Pete, you've just touched something on there, and I think, as sort of older Reds, I think you've brought up a subject there. You go back to the 71 Cup final team, and you've got Clements, who we signed from Scunthorpe, right? Chris Lawler, he was right back and come through the youth ranks, if you want to call it that. Alec Lindsay was signed from Bury. Tommy Smith, come through again, the ranks at the same time as Chris Lawler. Then we had Larry, who'd come from Bristol Rovers. Emlyn had come from Blackpool. Then we had Callie, who we'd signed, you know, again, come through the ranks. Yeah. Alan Evans from Wolves, Steve Highway from Skemmersdale, John Toshack, who we'd signed from Cardiff, and Brian Hall, who Shanks described as a clippy, who'd come from university. You know what I mean? The substitute was Peter Thompson, who we'd signed from Bolton. So there was no real sort of multi-million pound players. And as you hit the nail on the head there, it was all about good scouting, you know, with people like Jeff Twentyman, Tom Saunders, you know, Bob Paisley, you know, would all go and watch, you know, these players, and Liverpool would look for a certain type of player and, you know, look at the teams that they built on.
But that just all started from right through the league, didn't it, Les? You know, all them players that you can look at all come from like lower league sides and down the leagues. It was like a progression up. You know, like, I think that's what I think if you want to look about where football changed, I think it was, I wouldn't say when football was ruined, was the Bosman ruling, wasn't it? And then from the Bosman ruling, freedom of movement, you started buying all kinds of, like, everybody, foreign was best. And you have a conversation, we've had this conversation, haven't you, on the podcast lots of times about our own lads, like Sir Curtis and Harvey Elliott and, you know, players like Conor Bradley and coming through. But everybody talks about going out and buying the next big, you know, like superstar or the next big young up-and-coming foreign player. Everybody assumes that these type of players are so much better. And I think that's where the game changed, isn't it? Whereas, as you said, Jeff Twentyman, he was Shanks's scout, wasn't he? He was the main man who got them all. He was the instigator of all these brilliant signings that we talked about. You know, like, we could talk about Phil Neal as well from Northampton from the 60,000. You know, loads of them. Like, but Larry would be very, very sadly missed. Yeah,
yeah, Pete. It's quite, you know, a coincidence, really, isn't it? That, you know, we've talked about there. You know, about a centre half getting signed from Bristol Rovers. And Kwanzaa's come to the fore this season after being on loan at Bristol Rovers. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's a nice little bit of a symmetry there, isn't it, between, you know, a connection, if you like, between both play centre-half. You know, they've both done stints at Bristol Rovers and they've both come to Liverpool. And I just hope that Kwanzaa, you know, walks away at the end of this season with the same two medals that Big Larry walked away with, you know, the league and the UEFA Cup to his League Cup medal.
Yeah, it's a different time now. I mean, you see players go into the lower league with a bit of experience and to toughen up, really. You know, if you want, you know, some of the players over the past 15, 20 years, you look at some of the players, the great players, and I'll say Beckham and people like that, they've all had to go out to Preston and to lower leagues, and it's just to get an experience, because there's no central league now, is there? There's no real, you know, there's no real, what's the word I'm looking for? Competition, I suppose.
Competitive piece.
Yeah. I mean, the central league was an entertaining league in itself, really. You know, you could probably go and watch Liverpool reserves every week home and away and be entertained. Whereas now, the way football structured is, you've got like the academies and the like, and as I say, if you see a player starting to develop, the way that they toughen up and they develop for first team football is to go and get experience, getting kicked every week down at Tranmere Rovers or Wrexham or whatever. So, you know, the likes of Conor Bradley, he went to Bolton and got Player of the Year at Bolton. Their fans loved him. So it's a different thing now. Whereas, as I say, you very rarely see players being bought from the lower leagues into the Premier League and making a fist of it, really. It's sort of changed on its head, you know. But like you say, Quanton down to Bristol, he must have learned something from Joey Barton while he was down there, but I wouldn't say it was football. He might have just learned how to handle himself, I think.
Yeah, just before we finish on Larry, one funny story that I heard today, and it was somebody had put up a clip of Emlyn Hughes telling the story about Larry Lloyd, and I thought I'll use this on the podcast tonight, and it was Emlyn was saying that in one of Larry's sort of early games for Liverpool playing away to Birmingham City. And Birmingham City had a very young Trevor Francis playing, who was one of the quickest players around at that time. And as we've already said, Larry had many qualities, but pace wasn't one of them. So he said, we're winding Larry up about how quick Trevor Francis was. So Larry's taking it all in and sort of saying, yeah, I'll handle him. He won't get past me. He said, anyway, he said, we lost the toss. He said, Clive Thomas is the referee. He said, we lost the toss. He said, and Birmingham had the kickoff. He said, so they had this routine where Francis would go on the right-hand side. They'd take the kickoff and they'd try and drag us over and play the ball over to the right-hand side. But Big Larry, he said, had his eye on this and he just kept looking at Francis. Anyway, he said the ball eventually goes over to Trevor Francis after about 20 seconds. He said, and Larry sort of took him out. He said he got there. He said it was one hell of a tackle. He said he got nowhere near the ball, but he took him out. He said Trevor Francis looked like he'd been hit by Muhammad Ali. He was down, right? He said Clive Thomas comes over and says, "Blooming hell, Larry, you were a bit late there." And he said, "Not going to buke me, are you, ref?" He said, "I got there as quick as I could." And that just summed up Larry Lloyd, didn't it? You know what
I
I
thought
mean?
he was going to say less. I thought he was going to say he can't run without any legs.
Yeah, that was probably what he meant. Yeah.
Before we just go off the subject, not so Larry Lloyd, but you were talking about the 71 semi-final.
Yeah.
Have you seen any clips of the Chelsea Leeds replay at Old Trafford?
Yes,
Some of
I
the,
am.
honest to
Yeah.
God, they weren't just bad tackles, they were actually assaults, and
Yeah. Well,
they were being assaulted on the pitch, and
yeah.
they were just left to go,
I bet
Jack
you,
Charlton.
I bet you, Chopper. I bet you, Chopper was involved in
Jack Harris
the
was there, yeah, but Jackie
Yeah.
Charlton throwing himself about
Yeah.
and a couple
Jackie
of the
Charlton. Yeah.
Leeds players.
Yeah. Jackie Charlton gets Peter Osgood round the throat.
I
And
know, yeah.
he's strangling him, and the referee doesn't
Yeah.
even book him.
I remember showing, I don't think it was that game, but it was another, I think it was a game Ipswich Man United, and it wasn't that long ago when I say Jimmy Nicholl was playing for United, so it wasn't in the long distant past. And I was
Yeah.
showing it on to our Jack, and he said, how did he stay on the pitch, Dad? Jimmy
Yeah.
Nicholl was kicking Eric Gates up in the air. He was anyone that moved in the blue shirts, and he got away with it. And
Yeah, football was the better game then, Pete.
it was thing, yeah, we're all getting misty-eyed again, lads, aren't we, about
Yeah,
remembering the
yeah.
good days. But
Tell you what, that game you talked about, Les, that was that the final, the final, didn't the first final finish 2-2, and then he went
yeah.
to then he went to the replay,
Oh, good.
yeah, which
Yeah.
they played on a bog, and
Yeah.
they won it 2-1, didn't they, Chelsea?
I
And
think
I
Peter
think the
Bennessy,
fellow we mentioned before, David
David
Webb,
Webb.
got the winning goal.
I think
Yeah.
Peter Bennessy done his knee in, and he got his knee strapped up, and he couldn't kick the ball, as I
Yeah.
remember. But Bennessy had a bad injury.
Yeah.
But
Well,
no, I
game,
remember
well,
watching.
yeah, any younger supporters who just like watching football, just go onto YouTube and watch those Leeds Chelsea finals, right? Because you won't believe some of the challenges that went in. I mean, when you're all looking, you think what Curtis Jones got sent off for. You know what I mean? You virtually had to cut somebody's leg off to get sent off back in the day, unless you were Tommy Smith and you told Clive Thomas to go forth and multiply at Manchester City and he got sent off for dissent. But honest to God, some of the tackles that would go in them days, and you remembering that game, Pete, that you talked about, I remember the pompous David Ellery doing an experiment maybe 10, 15 years ago now, where he re-refereed that game between Leeds and Chelsea. And he said, if that game would have been played now, it would have been abandoned because there would have been so many players from each team sent off. There would have been enough players to complete the game, so it would have been abandoned. He said, because he kept coming up, yellow card, that would have been the second yellow card he'd have been off. And then,
I mean, as I say, some of the tackles were horrendous, and you know they were even career threatening. When you look at them, and you think, God, but for the grace of God, they could have been out of a career. But when you look at it today, for some of the yellow cards that are given now, it just spoils it so much.
Do you know what, Pete? When we go on to this, Les, while it's fresh in my mind, I'll ask the two of you, what's the worst tackle you've ever seen in a game and a player stayed on the pitch?
I was gonna bring up. Right. Have a look at the because this is what I was just gonna ask you, but we can tie the two things in together. Yeah. One of the worst tackles I've seen, right, was the one that caused Kevin Keegan and Billy Bremner to be sent off in the Charity Shield, where Johnny Giles went right over Kevin Keegan, right in front of the referee, and the referee didn't do anything. And then from the resulting sort of free kick, somebody went into Keegan again, and it all kicked off, and him and Bremner ended up having a fight, both getting sent off. But that was down to the referee not doing his job, because Johnny Giles should have been sent off because he started all that. But the tackles back then, Chopper Harris, Norman Hunter, even our own Tommy Smith didn't get called the Anfield Iron, for nothing. You know what I mean? But back then, the tackles were just sort of flying. Another game.
You know, what I thought was a really bad tackle, and I wasn't there because I was too young to go, I suppose. But the Bobby Collins tackle when Jerry Byrne had his collarbone done. It wasn't the fact that he did his collarbone, but he went right over the ball to get it. You know what I mean? He was a really nasty player, Bobby Collins, I believe. My dad used to talk about him when he saw him at Goodison and that play, and he said he was a real nasty piece of work. Great footballer, but he had a real dark side to him. And that tackle on Jerry Byrne, where he goes right over the ball, no intent to play it, and then the follow through, Jerry Byrne's collarbone gets snapped,
Yeah, another game to look at, Tom, if you want to look at bad tackles going in. Right, have a look at the famous game between Leeds and West Brom on YouTube in 1971 with Ray Tinkler as the referee. And just look at one of the tackles that Billy Bremner does. Right, on one of the West Brom players, right in front of the linesman. Actually, nothing. You'll remember this game. This was the famous game where Leeds were going for the title, and they got beat 2-1 at home to West Brom. And Ray Tinkler was the referee, and the linesman flagged for offside, and Tinkler waved play on.
He'll stop Leeds, didn't he? Stop playing.
All the Leeds players stopped, and the West Brom fan goes forward. Yeah, and just squares it to Jeff Astle, who puts in the empty net. And you, honest to God, it's really worth watching that, because there's actually fans run on the pitch to try and get at the referee, and they're getting dragged off. There's an old fella there in a yellow shirt, right? He's going up, and his copper's got him by round the neck, and he's pointing the finger at the referee. And next thing, the linesman gets it by something out of the crowd. Honest to God, it's one of the games I remembered as a kid, and I've watched it a few times on YouTube if I've got like 10-15 minutes, because it's, and the commentary from Barry Davis is absolutely brilliant. You need to watch it.
Do you know, there's two stick in my mind. Like the first one which actually it destroyed George Best's knee. Actually, he had a cartilage operation straight after it. Was the game in Man United versus Chelsea, and Harris comes sliding along in the mud, and like George Best is running down the middle of the pitch, he's got a breakaway, and he sees him coming, and he's sliding with both feet up in the air, and he tries to jump over Harris's, and he gets it with one foot, gets it just over him where he's coming, and he brings the other one up and just launches it and just clatters into his knee, so much so he gets down best. He hurdles him, lands on his knee, twists his knee, but he carries on. But like, he just carries on sliding past. And the other one was Leeds against Derby County, where Franny Lee gets chopped by Norman Harris. By Norman Hunter. And he goes in and pushes him, and he gets up and punches Franny Lee in the nose, and his nose is bleeding. I mean, and all this furore breaks out in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, and then they have another fight, don't they?
Sets them off. And then you look across, and Franny Lee's like a windmill. And he puts Hunter on the floor.
You can actually watch that game on YouTube as well. That is on there. So have a look at that one as well. But big Larry Lloyd has brought those memories flooding back, because like, he was an uncompromising player, but a very, very good player. And I'm sure all Liverpool supporters will join me, Tom, and Pete tonight in sending our condolences to his family and his friends. It's a sad loss for football, and it's a sad loss for Liverpool and Nottingham Forest, where he's a legend at both clubs. And, you know, he'll get a deserved, great reception on Sunday when we pay tribute to him at Anfield. Now, lads, this is the surprise I've got to for you. Right, we're entering the final 10. I've got my own pen tonight, Pete.
So I've written down
the fixtures for each of the clubs. I'm going to go through them week by week, and you're going to tell me whether it will be a win or a draw or a defeat for Arsenal, the 115ers, or ourselves. And then at the end, I will tot up your points and see who you think will eventually come out with the Premier League title. So you've had no prior notice of this, which you didn't perfectly, so you couldn't think about it too much. Right?
Okay.
So the first one I'm going is the 115ers are home to Arsenal on Sunday. And I'll start with you, Tom, on this one.
Manchester City 2, Arsenal 1.
I don't actually want to know the results. I just want to know who you think or when it's going to be. So you're going for a Manchester City win?
Manchester City win.
Right, okay. And on the same day, it's Liverpool v Brighton.
Liverpool versus Brighton. Liverpool win.
Okay. Right, Pete, what are you going for with that? With first of all, Arsenal's visit to the Etihad.
I think it'll be a draw.
So you're going 1-1. And Liverpool are home to Brighton.
Well, Liverpool win.
Liverpool win. So I'm going to go for a Manchester City win on Sunday, and also a Liverpool win. Now, I'm going to come to you next, Pete. The next game for Arsenal is Luton at home.
Arsenal to win that.
And then the 115ers have got Aston Villa at home.
I think City will win that.
Okay. And Liverpool have got Sheffield United at home.
Yeah, a Liverpool win.
Tom, Arsenal v Luton.
Arsenal win.
Manchester City v Villa.
Manchester City. I'm going to go for a draw, Les.
Going for a draw. Liverpool, Sheffield United.
Liverpool win.
Right, okay. Well, I'm going for an Arsenal win at home to Luton. I'm going for a Manchester City and Aston Villa draw. And I'm going for Liverpool to beat Sheffield United. Right, I come back to you now, Tom. The next one is Arsenal away at Brighton.
Arsenal away at Brighton. Oh. Arsenal win.
Arsenal win. And Manchester City or the 115ers away at Palace.
Well, Manchester City win.
And Liverpool away at Manchester United.
A Liverpool win.
Right. Pete, the same for you. Arsenal away at Brighton.
I'll go for a draw on that one.
You're going for a draw. Okay. And then we've got Manchester City away at Palace.
Yeah, I think City will win that one.
And Liverpool away at Man United.
Yeah, we've learned our lesson. I think we win at United.
You win at United. Okay. So I'm going for an Arsenal win at Brighton. I'm going for a Manchester City win at Palace. And we're going for a Liverpool draw at Man United. Right. So now we come to Arsenal, right? Their next game follows the European Cup first leg against Bayern Munich, and it's Aston Villa at home. So I'll start with you at this one, Pete.
If it's after the European game, I'd go for the draw for that one. I think Villa might nick something.
You're going for a draw. Okay. And then the same after the first leg, Real Madrid, the 115ers have got Luton at home. Go on, Pete.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, City will win that, yeah.
And Liverpool have got Crystal Palace at home.
Liverpool win.
Okay. Tom, same for you. We've got Arsenal. I've got Aston Villa at home after the first leg against Bayern Munich.
I think that might be a draw, that Les.
So Tom's going for a draw there. Then you've got the 115 is a home to Luton.
I'll win for City.
And Liverpool are home to Palace.
A Liverpool win.
Right. Well, I'm following the trend. I'm going for a Villa draw at Arsenal. I'm going for a Man City win against Luton, and I'm going for a Liverpool win against Crystal Palace. Now things start to heat up. Now we've got before the second legs of the European competition. Arsenal have got Wolves away. So come to you, Tom, on this one.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go for an Arsenal win there, Les.
You're going for an Arsenal win.
Yeah.
Okay. The 115ers after the second leg against Real Madrid are away to Tottenham.
Oh, do you know what? I'm going for a Tottenham win there, Les.
Tottenham win.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and Liverpool that weekend again after the European game are away at Fulham.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for a Liverpool win.
Okay, now same to you here, Pete. Wolves away for Arsenal after the second leg against Bayern.
I think Arsenal will win that one.
You think Arsenal win that one? Okay. And then again, the 115ers away at Spurs.
I think this could be the one that they drop points on. I think I'm going for a Tottenham win on this one as well.
You're going for a Tottenham win on that one. Okay. And Liverpool at Fulham.
Got to be Liverpool, mate. Got to get the 3 points.
Liverpool. Right. Well, I'm going for an Arsenal draw at Wolves. And we're going for a Manchester City draw at Spurs. and I'm going for a Liverpool win at Fulham. Right, now we head into sort of, I think we're heading into the crux of the season. Now, each team have got a midweek game that particular week. And we'll start with you, Pete, on this one. Arsenal have got Chelsea at home.
Chelsea would love to upset them, wouldn't they? I think that might be a draw, you know.
So Pete's going for a draw. The 115ers have got Notts Forest away in the midweek.
Yeah, I can only see City winning it, to be honest. I know Forest are fighting, but I think it'll be City.
Okay. And Liverpool are at the Pit.
I said the other day, last time, we've got to win 9 out of 10, and I think this could be the one where we might just get a draw, you know. Might be a draw at Goodison.
You go for a draw. So, Tom, I'll go back to you. It's now Arsenal at home to Chelsea.
That's, you know what, that's a tough one to call, isn't it? Do you know what? I'll go for a draw for that, Les.
You're going for a draw? Okay. Then we're going the 115ers away at Forest.
Oh, I can't see anything but a Forest. I think you'll win at City win.
Okay. And Liverpool at the Pit.
We're going to beat them, at Les. We're going to beat them. I think it's, you know what? There's no ifs, buts.
You get going for Liverpool win then, Tom?
Without a doubt, yeah.
Right, okay. So I'm going for an Arsenal win at home to Chelsea. I'm going for a City win away at Forest. And I'm going for a Liverpool win at the Pit. Right, so I'll start with you this time, Tom. Now, obviously, we don't know at this point whether teams are going to get through in Europe, right? But if we do, the next game for Arsenal is away at Spurs.
Do you know what?
That is the week before the first leg of the semi.
I can't see anything else but a Spurs win.
Okay, so that's nothing there. And then the 115ers have got Wolves at home.
A win for City.
Okay, and Liverpool are away at West Ham that weekend.
Jesus Christ, this could be a, you know, I think we'll win at West Ham.
You think we'll win at West Ham? Okay, Pete, I'm going with you. You've got Arsenal away at Spurs.
I think Spurs will do them. I really do. I think Tottenham will win.
Spurs will do them. You've got Manchester City at home to Wolves.
Yeah, City win all day, that one.
City win all day, that one. And you've got Liverpool away at West Ham.
I think we'll win at West Ham. We normally have a good showdown at West Ham. I think we'll win.
Okay, I'm agreeing with you. I think Spurs will beat Arsenal. I think Manchester City will beat Wolves. And I think Liverpool will beat West Ham. Right, so now I'm going to you first on this one, Pete. The next set of fixtures, you've got Arsenal at a home to Bournemouth.
Yeah, I can only see Arsenal winning that one, yeah.
Right, and then you've got another little tricky one here. You've got Manchester City away at Fulham. And bear in mind, this is like after the possible Arsenal could be playing City this week. City could be playing Bayern Munich. Arsenal could have been playing Real Madrid in the midweek before this game.
I still think City will come through at Fulham, to be honest, and see City winning that.
Okay. And Liverpool at home to Tottenham.
That's going to be a really tough game, that, but I think we'll beat Spurs. I think we will.
Okay. Tom, same three fixtures for you. Arsenal, after a possible European first leg semi-final, have got Bournemouth at home.
Arsenal win.
Arsenal win. The 115ers, again, after a possible first leg semi-final, have got Fulham.
I think it'll be a Manchester City win.
And Liverpool v Spurs at home.
I think Liverpool will draw against Spurs, Les.
Okay, well, I'm going for an Arsenal win against Bournemouth. I'm going for a City win against Fulham. And I'm going for a Liverpool win against Tottenham, because I just think that the crowd will be right up for that game. And it'll be one where sort of Liverpool will be determined to come up with the 3 points in that game, because we'll be at a really crucial part of the season. Now, the games preceding the second legs of possible finals. I'll start with you on this one, Tom. Arsenal away at Man United.
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty. Now, Manchester United will want, I don't know, will they want revenge?
They could be still fighting for possible fifth place in the Champions League, please, Tom.
Yeah. A draw, Les.
You're going for a draw.
Yeah.
Okay. The 115ers away at Brighton.
Manchester City win.
And Liverpool away at Aston Villa.
Liverpool win.
Okay. Pete, the Arsenal away at United after a possible semi-final.
Like you say, United could be pushing to get like fourth or fifth. So I'm going for a United win for that one.
Win for that one. Okay. The 115ers away at Brighton.
I'll go for the draw for that.
You're going for a
Brighton
draw.
Brighton could be for Europe as well.
You're going for a draw. And Liverpool away at Villa.
Yeah, we've just got to win that game. I know Villa are up in the mix for the top four, but I think we'll win at Villa.
You think we'll win at Villa? Okay, I'm going for a draw between Arsenal United. I'm going for a Manchester City win at Brighton, and I'm going for a Liverpool win at Villa. And we come to the final day of the season, and I'll start with you, Pete, on this one. Arsenal at home to the Bitters.
Arsenal win.
Then we've got Manchester City, or the 115 is at home to the Hammers.
Yeah, City win.
And Liverpool at home to Wolves.
Yeah, Liverpool win. Three wins there.
Okay. Same for you, Tom. Arsenal at home to the Bitters.
They'll murder Everton.
There was no hesitation there whatsoever, was there? The 115 is at home to the Hammers.
Oh, do you beat them? Yeah.
And Liverpool at home to Wolves.
You know what? This is the game that worries me, you know, Les. This is the game that really worries me at Anfield. It's going to be Jürgen Klopp's last game. I think it's going to be an emotional game. It's going to be like, you would imagine that everybody's going to be right up for it. I'm be pushing. I think Liverpool will win, but I think it'll be really, really tight.
Okay, so I'm going for Arsenal to beat the Bitters, City will beat West Ham, and Liverpool will beat Wolves. So you've now done all your predictions. So I'll actually say now who you all predict win the league. But just before, while I'm adding up the scores, just have a quick chat about. I'll start with you, Tom, on this one, and you can come in, Pete. The semi-finals between the quarter-finals of the Champions League. How would you, at this moment, Tom, are you hoping that both English clubs get through to play each other? Or if one English club was to go out, which one would you prefer to go out?
I think both will win, Les. I think Arsenal would beat Bayern Munich, and I think what's it called? I think City will beat Real Madrid. As much as I'd love Manchester City to go out, and hope, but I think, do you know what? I don't know. I just got this feeling that they're going to beat them. You know.
Yeah. Pete, what do you think?
I can see them both going out, to be honest. I think Bayern Munich are obviously not going to win the Bundesliga. Now they're 10 points, I think, behind Leverkusen. And it's there. I'm not sure if they're still in the cup. I think Leverkusen are still in the cup as well, aren't they? So I think they're going to really go for it. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Harry Kane comes back to North London and puts them to the sword, to be honest. I think with the City-Madrid game, I think City really did them over. Was it last season or the one before? Was it last season? They did them home and away. And I think Madrid are a better side now. I think with the likes of Bellingham and that in there, I think they're a much better side. It wouldn't surprise me. I think out of the two, if one of the English clubs is going to go through, I'd probably plump for City. But I could see both of them going out at that stage, to be honest.
Yeah, as I say, it's going to be two interesting ties, aren't you? So I'm just sort of turn your mind forward to the possible semi-finals a little bit, if you will, and just say, I want you to presume that Manchester City go out to Real Madrid, and then it's Arsenal v Real Madrid in the semi-final, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that will Manchester City going out will sort of enhance or hinder our chances of winning the league?
I'm not quite sure, Les, because I see Liverpool. I've said all the way along. I see Liverpool not with players coming back and fresh legs and people who haven't rest and getting players back. I can see Liverpool winning. I can see them winning 9 games. I really can. I'll be amazed if we don't, really. So I don't think it'll make much difference. Manchester City will do whatever Manchester City will do. They've got a few hard games along the way, you know. But Manchester City are going to be runners right to the wire. They're going to be the team that's going to run us right to the wire, whether they go out or whether they stay in, you know. But I'm not so sure with Real Madrid, you know. I think Liverpool proved that you can get at City if you go at them. I think Real Madrid will go at them, but you know what? I think City will hate Real Madrid defensively, so I can't see them going out, you know, Les. Yeah. I really can't.
Peace. The other way around, do you think if Arsenal get knocked out by Bayern, and then do you think that will help or hinder our chances of winning the league?
Our chances?
Yes.
I think the thing we've got to remember as well is we might be playing in Europe still.
That's why I'm asking you the question.
I think if you ask any footballer at the highest level, sometimes a defeat can really knock you in the, you know, a defeat in Europe or any other cup really can knock your league playing as well. And I think if Liverpool can get through the Atalanta games, I think most professional footballers turn around and say, when you're on a winning streak, you want to play every day, not every 3 days, you want to play every day. So I think if we can get through the Atalanta side, I think they'll just want to bring every game they can on. And that includes if we get, you know, but we're assuming we might get Benfica in the semi-final. So I don't think it'll hinder us. I think it's going to be tough because, you know, it comes with the territory. If you're a successful team and you're still in cups later on, I mean, City have still got the FA Cup as well to think about. Somewhere down the line, you probably are going to come unstuck in a game or two, and let's hope the if that's the case, the Arsenal and City come unstuck in the Premier League as opposed to the European. But I just think if, like Tom said, if we can get these injuries, the injury list right down and have a really strong squad, I think we can push all the way, to be honest. I really do.
Yeah, so a really interesting end of the season. I'm nearly done with me with my adding up here.
There's no Carol Vorderman, is he, Tom?
Oh,
she'd
no.
have had it by now.
To be honest, I'm a bit disappointed, Les.
The clock's ticking on countdown here, mate.
Is it? Well, there you go.
Go on.
I'm just writing down the final figures now. You know, for the first time ever, when I've wanted Tom to shut up, he hasn't. You know what I mean? You know, normally he will talk. Normally Tom will talk for Britain, but not this time. You know what I mean? He's let down. I thought I could be giving a subject there.
All right.
Okay. So the scores on the doors are now there. Tom, right, you've gone for a final league table for your predictions of Liverpool 92 points.
Yeah.
The 115 is 88.
Yeah.
And Arsenal 82.
Yeah.
Right. Pete, you've also gone Liverpool 92. You've gone a little bit less than Tom. You've got the 115 is on 86. And you've got Arsenal even further back than Tom on 80.
That'll do me.
Right. And I've gone for Liverpool 92. The 115 is 90 and Arsenal 82. So going by that, we're all quite confident that Liverpool are gonna do it. And I just hope that what he said we're gonna do it. I think it's Pete who says we're going to do it by 6 points, so we could win it against either Tottenham or Aston Villa. That'll do for me, mate. I tell you, I don't
remember going into that last day against Wolves, ironically, when we had the chance, and bloody City were two down to Villa.
Ooh.
And I don't want to go through that again on the last day.
But you know what? It's funny, Pete. We were never in control of that day, really.
No, never. Even though. Because Wolves took the lead against us, didn't they?
It did,
they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were chasing the game anyway, and then we equalised, and then even when we got ahead, I think Salah was running towards the Kemlin Road, wasn't he? Waving, you know,
yeah.
Some fella was telling them that City had got it back to 3-2.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, and I mean, I want to win the league at Anfield.
Yeah.
I really do. But if it means us going to Villa Park and needing a point. I'll go to Villa Park and stand outside. Yeah. I won't get a ticket, you know.
I was just gonna say, I'll be happy if I'm with you on the Sunday or the Saturday evening or whatever it may be, outside Anfield, beeping me horn that we've won the league of Villa. And I'll be happy staying at Anfield up until the early hours of the morning, like we did, you know, last time after Chelsea beat Man City. So yeah, I'd be quite happy with that. Tom, moving on to the game at the weekend. Good news on Rubble today. Just an impact injury, so we don't know whether he's going to be fit for the game on Sunday or not. But he certainly, if he misses Sunday, he's certainly got a chance against Sheffield United next Thursday or against Man United the following Sunday. So that's good news.
Our Paul was telling me, Les, that he'd read it in the Scotsman. Three or four hours ago, that it was just an impact injury, and they'd done an X-ray and everything, and they'd sorted it out, and that he was all right after the game. So it looks like it's just been he's took an impact, and hopefully, as you say, I don't think they'll risk him on Sunday, but. As you say, he'd be ready for Sheffield United. We need him in the running. We need all of them back for the running, Les. I think we need Jota back. I think we need Curtis back. We need Gravenberch back. Canate back. We need. So what it does is it gives players a rest. You know, like the likes of Szoboszlai and McAllister and Endo as well. Endo's coming back from a long trip, hasn't he?
So, yeah, he only played one game though, Tom, because the second one was cancelled. So he's been back a while now.
Oh, good. Well, that's even better. But it just, what it does is it gives Jürgen more options so that we can sort of, we can chavvy it up a little bit. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? You know, like, it's going to be interesting because Diaz played the other day and he looked quite fit. You know, yeah. Nunes has been back at Anfield, hasn't he?
He had a little bit of cramp, to be honest, in his...
Yeah.
In his groins, and that's why he was struggling a little bit after the FA Cup game.
Is Stefan Bacesic getting any closer to being in the squad?
Supposed to be.
Yeah, we'll hopefully find out a little bit more off Jürgen at his press conference tomorrow, Pete, about all the injuries, the likes of Trent and that. But you know, when we heard the Robbo news on Tuesday. You know what I mean? We were all a bit, oh, no. You know what I mean? But luckily, you know, that is, even if he misses, you know, the two games this week, the fact that he'll be back and available for the squad, you know, possibly against Man United at the latest, that's really good news after, you know, the way everybody was really concerned on Tuesday evening, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think we all agree we're not really fond of international football. Although I did watch the Wales game with the sound down because it was on SC4. So, I was looking at that game with interest. But, it's the reason why... I mean, I don't know about you two lads, but I'm on my phone looking at the internationals just to see if, A, any of our players have started. And then if they have started, to make sure that they're not injured or whatever. And when we heard Robbo had sort of gone off, I think hopefully it was more precautionary. But like you said, he might just err on the side of caution for the Brighton game, certainly. Possibly he might be on the bench, or they may even, you know, give him a rest totally to make sure it's fully healed for either Sheffield or Manchester United. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Tom, it was good to see for Joe Gomez, for him to get, you know, a couple of games for England. I mean, I'd have been quite happy if he hadn't been selected, to be honest. But for Joe himself, you know, that was a well-deserved reward in his eyes that he's back, you know, in the international fold and he's got a chance of going to the Euros in the summer. But I noticed he came on as sub in the first game, probably for the last 20 minutes or so. And I was quite happy when I seen the England side that was starting on Tuesday, that he wasn't in the starting lineup, and I don't watch England, so I wasn't watching. And like Pete said, I was just checking on my iPad to see, you know, what the scores were, and you know, if anybody had gone off. And I noticed that he replaced John Stones after 10 minutes. I thought to myself, you know, what have you put him on for against Southgate? You know, why didn't you put Branthwaite on and have a look at him? You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's quite sort of. You know, Kyle Walker, you know, in the first game, he suddenly pulls up with an injury after 27 minutes. Kevin De Bruyne didn't go to Belgium. Haaland felt some pain in his leg, so didn't went away to Norway and then got sent back. And then John Stones sort of pulls up after 10 minutes of, you know, the England game and goes off. Now, I know you're like a flutter now and again, Tom, but what's the odds on all them players starting?
Do you know what? It's not even in doubt, is it? They'll all be fit. Like Lazarus. The whole team of Lazarus. You know, like they come back.
How many times in the past did we hear of Ferguson? Giggs is out. Scholes is out. Sheen's out. And then they'd all trot out of the tunnel at Anfield all fully fit.
You know what's going to come. They're going to be full strength. I don't even take any notice. It's just part and parcel of what he does, isn't it? It's part of his DNA. He just, you know, like he, But he bullshits basically for you know, like, oh, that's all he's doing, isn't he? He's conning everyone, but he doesn't con anybody because no one takes any notice. They'll all play, they'll all be fit to play, Stones as well. But it was good. While I was like, used, I've seen that, Les, but that he played Joe Gomez, and it was good that he got a bit of time, you know, like, and he deserves it after the luck he's had, especially with England, you know. So for the lad himself, I was really made up for him.
I've only read reports or read snippets, to be honest, because as I say, I'm not really interested in England and international, but I don't think Branthwaite got a chance in any of the, either of the games, did he?
No, he didn't, which you think about. It's a friendly game. That's the time to have a look at him, isn't it? So you send him by that. That's the last sort of, you know, games England have got now, really, before he'll name his squad for the Euros. So as he hadn't had a look at him, unless there's an injury crisis at centre-back, it doesn't look as though he's going to go, does it, Branthwaite? Because he's wasted the opportunity now to give him a chance. But, you know, that's Everton's game, isn't it? And you know, because they'll have a fully rested player. But I don't think he'll be there at the start of next season anyway. He'll be somewhere else. But anyway, Pete, now, I know we don't really know where we are with the injuries, but what have you come up with for your starting 11? On Sunday,
right, like you say, injuries allowing, hopefully no injuries or tiredness or anything else. So I've gone for Kelleher, obviously in goal. Across the back four, I've gone Bradley. I'm not sure. I think Konate might have played a full game for France, did he?
He did play, yeah. So Hume's fit then.
Yeah. Okay, I've gone Bradley. Van Dijk. I've put Gomez at left back. I'm not too sure if Robbo will play if he's had that knock. And then to partner Van Dijk, I'll probably go Kwanzaa. Midfield, Endo, Szoboszlai, McAllister, and then Salah, Nunes and Diaz up front.
Yeah, the only... What's your sort of thoughts on Pete's team there, Tom?
Yeah, I wouldn't say many changes to that, Les. If they're all fit, if Nunes is fit, I think Nunes will start. If Diaz is fit, I think Diaz will start. I think Mo's going to start because he's been training, hasn't he, all the time. I think it's going to be Endo. Endo's going to play. I think McAllister will play. I think Szoboszlai will play. I think Gravenberch might be on the bench if he's back. I don't think Curtis will be back, but
do you reckon Curtis will be back, Tom?
Really? Well, that'll be a great bonus if you've got Gravenberch and Curtis back on the bench and Harvey Elliott.
The bench will look a lot stronger, won't it?
Yeah.
That'll be amazing if we've got that, Les, because for the games coming up, I think.
And you've got Harvey as well on the bench, Harvey Elliott, Costas, people like that.
I think if Canate's played a full game, he might start with Canate and have Kwanzaa come on at half time or something, give him half a game.
I think if Canate is fit and he's hasn't had any reaction to playing his first game, you know, in the midweek after being out for a couple of weeks, I think Canate will start on Sunday, and then for the game on Thursday, I think then Kwanzaa will start instead of Canate alongside Virgil, and then Virgil and Canate will start together against United the following Sunday. So let's hope for some good news at the, you know, at the press conference tomorrow. Just that, go to you, Tom, first for your score prediction for Sunday.
3-1, Les, Liverpool.
Pete?
I'm smiling because that's what I had in my head, 3-1.
Okay. I go for 2-0 for Liverpool. Just before we finish tonight, and, you know, I want to hope over the next sort of couple of weeks we're going to be able to do a special podcast on this because it's well worth sort of, you know, bringing it to as many people as we can who listen to it. Both myself, Tom, and Pete and Ben Kent Jr. as well. during the March of the Day walk at the weekend. We did the Liverpool leg of the walk. And I think we have to pay tribute here, Tom, don't we, to Mike Wilson for his brilliant organisation of the event. I was really impressed, you know, with the way how everything was organised. And at the minute, the last I saw, there's been over 180,000 earned for the foundation, Tom.
Yeah, you're talking today about 190, Les, with gift aid, which would be fantastic, wouldn't it? So, you know, like, they're hoping to make it 200,000 with the shirts that they got for sale. He's an incredible fella, Mike. He really is. You know, like, he works so hard for when he puts his heart and soul into something, he really does put his heart and soul into it. And I think a lot of the people were saying, you know, like, or the videos that we've seen, people saying it wouldn't have happened without him. He's planning, well, we know in advance, don't we? He's planning March of the Day 2, you know, like, and he's just an incredible man. And I think such a worthy cause, and seeing Stephen and seeing Marcus at first hand up at Anfield, by Goodison and by Anfield. It was very humbling, Les, wasn't it? To be able to chat to, you know, Marcus's wife as well. She's just the remarkable sacrifice that the you know, like, that's going on, and Mike doing such a fantastic job. I wish them all well for the future. You really do. Wish them that he gets to the figure that they're looking for as quickly as possible.
It was, Pete, wasn't it? It was a real sort of privilege, wasn't it, to be able to take part, you know, in the walk and feel as though, you know, you're helping to promote and contribute to, you know, a really awful, debilitating illness that, you know, that sort of breaks your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, personally, we lost a workmate in the place I am, and he went pretty quick. He went within 12 months of being diagnosed, Lee, and it was such a shame. And he was a young man. He was only in his early 50s, mid-50s. But it was, I think the way Tom said it, it was a privilege to go on that walk. And it was to see the families close up. Like you say, we were talking to Marcus's wife briefly and to Steph Horton as well. And it's just the fortitude that them people have got. You know, they're so brave. That, you know, this illness is so cruel. It's, you know, and hopefully with the funds that are being raised, somewhere down the line, they'll make a breakthrough on this and find a cure for it. Because, I mean, you know, to see Stephen, how he was in his wheelchair and how, you know, it was heartbreaking at times, but it was also uplifting to actually be on that walk. You know, we were walking at certain stages on that walk, shoulder to shoulder with Jamie Redknapp. We were walking with Jill Scott. You know, we were walking with other people, and it wasn't an us and them. It wasn't like the superstars were at, you know, on their own. They were with the rank and file, if you want. And there were so many people out on that walk, and also the support, the motorists, you know, beeping the horns all the way up the East Lancs, all the way from Goodison and then up to Anfield. And like you say, it was quite humbling to be on that walk to realise just what some families are going through. And and like you say, just another word for Mike Wilson and the people who organised it. It was absolutely fantastic efforts.
His brother-in-law's Les as well. We all forget his brother-in-law, Woody, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, he's his sidekick who also puts his heart and soul into it, you know, like 100%. Remarkable, remarkable people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
As Pete said there, you know, and he made a really good point, and it's one that's really worth reiterating, really, was that there was real some, you know, there was a load of former players who took part in, you know, in various stages of the walk. And when they were walking, you know, there was no separation between the former players stroke, you know, and some of them are, you know, are real superstars. There was no real, sort of space between them. Everybody was together. And I think what that message that sends is that no matter whether you're an athlete, like, you know, the likes of Darbs and Marcus Stewart and Rob Burrow, Doddy Weir, who've all suffered, and many others, you know, who've suffered from this awful disease, or whether you're just a normal, you know, day-to-day, 9 to 5, 8 till 2, you know, whatever you do in your life, you can be struck down by this debilitating disease, can't you? And so that's what it was showing, that no matter who you are, that, you know, we've got to find a cure for this together, because you don't know who it could hit next. But whether that be a, you know, an athlete or just a normal person, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, it is, as we were saying, of the word humbling, the way they carry themselves and just, you know, the energy and the drive and the determination, you know, like, to get to where they need to get, you know, like, it was a privilege to be there. I really, you know, like, as you said, we had a good walk down and had a chat to Jamie Redknapp, and we found, you know, like, what a humble guy he is as well, Les, you know.
Yeah.
He took the time out to come all the way down and for Marcus Stewart, because he knew him as a younger player, and Stephen as well, you know. So just amazing that the amount of people that have come out and supported it. And I think what Mike's doing, it'll only get bigger and stronger. I think next time it goes, it'll be bigger again, because football now, it'll bring more people out, you know, more ex-players out who've seen what was happening. And I think, you know, I think it can only be a good thing, because we need to find a cure for this. For this illness, it's beyond words, isn't it? Really, it's a living hell for the people who have to suffer it, but they suffer it so tremendously with such dignity and such bravery.
Yeah, as I say, the other great thing for me was that, you know, to hear that I'm part of the walk. You know, in the early stages, Kevin Sinfield joined the war as well. Now, to me, you know, there's friendship, and we're all friends with people, and we all think we're good friends with people, but he actually shows what real friendship is, doesn't he? What he's done for, like, Rob Burrow. You know what I mean? And how he isn't, and I'm no establishment lover. You know what I mean? I can't stand the establishment. But, you know, how certain people can have say before the name, and he doesn't.
You've hit the nail on the head there. You know, like, he said, I remember watching an interview with Kevin Sinfield. He said, you know, like, he said, I was his captain. And, like, he's a really close friend, he said. And he was the one, he said, I was his captain. So if I couldn't step up for him, then you could, you know, like, and as you said, it goes beyond the friendship, that, doesn't it? It's like,
love of a brother, really. When you've seen Kevin Sinfield doing these marathons and carrying Rob Burrows the last few yards over the line, and it's just heartbreaking to watch. And
But you know what, you get the feeling, don't you? If it had been the other way around, Rob Burrows would have been carrying Kevin Sinfield, you know, it's
like a brother loving it.
Yeah,
really.
Terrible thing.
Yeah, just to end on this, I've got one more thing to ask you, because I've got some major breaking news to bring to you. Right, it's just broke now as we speak, but before I bring you that and get your reaction to this news, I'd just like to say I love you, Darbs. Known you many, many years. You know, you break my heart when I see you like you are. Mike Wilson, the admiration I've got for you, mate, is unbelievable. You know, the You've just, you've you, the work. What you do goes beyond words, and I can't thank you enough. And keep up the good work, mate. We'll see you on the podcast soon. Anyway, the major breaking news that's just come up by Paul Joyce and Chris Bascombe, and I'm going to come to you on this one, Tom, right away, and Pete can have a, his views on this. The report that Xabi Alonso is likely to stay at Leverkusen, so will not be on the shortlist to be the next Liverpool manager. So what's your thoughts on that, Tom?
You know what? Funny enough, Les, I was thinking the last few days that I didn't think he would come, you know, after we had a conversation, didn't we, with Jamie Redknapp. And he said, remember, and that got me in a mode of thought where he said, you know, why would he come to Liverpool? Because he can come to Liverpool at any later date as a career move. And you know what? I've got this feeling that it's going to be the sport of Lisbon, lad. Your answer on Amorim, because he seems to fit all the criteria. You know, like he's very much in the Jurgen Klopp mould, and so I'm to be honest, I'm not really surprised, because for all the stories that's been going round, you know, like that hasn't really shocked me, to be honest.
Pete, what's your reaction?
I don't think anything in football shocks me anymore, to be honest. If it is true that he wants to stay at Leverkusen, I admire what he's doing, actually. He sounds like he's a man of principle, Xabi Alonso. He's a young manager. And if he can win the Bundesliga and even the Cup, I'm sure they're in the Cup semi-final as well. I think if he can do the domestic double, and he stays at Leverkusen for even if it's only one more season, he's got years ahead of him. I think ultimately, as an ex Real Madrid player, he'll probably want to manage Madrid one day. But you know, if he uses Liverpool or another for that matter as a stepping stone, who knows? But it wouldn't surprise me. In a way, it'd be nice for him to win the double in Germany and not just walk away from it and say, well, I've built this team. Let's go for it again next season and do it again. So he's got plenty, you know, he has got time on his hands, God willing. And it's something he can look forward to in the future. But as to what position that puts Liverpool in, I'm sure they haven't put all their eggs into one basket. And whether this guy from Sport Lisbon is the man, or it could be something totally left field, we're not even in the equation with, you know. I don't think the lad we're coming up against on Sunday, De Zerbi, I'm not too sure if he's the right fit at the minute, to be honest, for Liverpool. But there might be someone out there who we're not even discussing. And the only thing I'd say as a parting shot is, don't forget Mourinho's out of work.
Tom, maybe
10 years ago for Mourinho, maybe that ship sailed, but you know, you never know. As I say, nothing in football shocks you.
Yeah, so it gives you, I think now the Liverpool have got, you know, the likes of Michael Edwards in and Richard Hughes in into place now. At least you've got a structure there that's going to be, that you've got trust in, really, haven't you, in Michael Edwards, who, you know, to go for the right man and sort of, you know, rather than sort of not have those figures there and you're thinking, right, who's going to be selecting the new manager? You'd have confidence, don't you, in Michael Edwards to, you know, to get the right man.
I think if Paul Joyce has reported that, then, Les, then you get the feeling, don't you, that Liverpool had spoken to Xabi Alonso earlier, probably sometimes during the last 7 days, 8 days, and that, you know, he's made his feelings aware. So Liverpool, you would imagine now, they're further along the line to getting a new manager, because I can't think they'd be sitting there on their hands waiting. So I think once Michael Edwards has set the wheels in motion, I'm sure he knows who he wants. And it's just a matter of going out and getting who he believes is the right man for the job. Who that is, we just have to wait and see and be patient. But while everyone would be a bit disappointed, there'd be an awful lot of people disappointed tonight with that news. But to be honest, as I said, after the chat really, I think that made me sort of think I wasn't so 100% confident that he was going to come anyhow.
Pete, have you got confidence in Michael Edwards that he'll get the right man?
I would certainly hope so. The only thing I'm a little bit reticent about is I think his brief has been to come in with FSG, not just for Liverpool, but also, you know, to try and find teams on the continent as well as for their portfolio, if you want to call it. And that sort of worries me a bit, that he might take his eye off the ball as a Liverpool employee and start looking to, you know, to look at teams over in Belgium and France and wherever they're looking. But he obviously knows the club. He's been the club before. Richard Hughes, I don't know a great deal about, but I've read about, you know, since he's come to Liverpool, and he's held in high esteem in the football world. So I think he's better, very thorough in what he does. So you would think between them, they will certainly pick the right man that's available. It's all down to availability at the end of the day. And if certain clubs don't want to lose their manager, we may have to stump up a fee. Certainly not in the realms of footballers on the field, but certainly a compensation package, you know. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll be working diligently behind the scenes. And if Xabi's not the one, I mean, I think the only thing, if we had got Xabi Alonso, is that the fans would give him some slack. You know, if he didn't win anything or have a successful first couple of seasons, the you know, the fans would give him all the backing, which I'm sure they would on any manager. But I think he'd have probably got a little bit more sympathy, if that's the right term, off the fans if it didn't work out straight away, you know.
Yeah, so on that note, if it's Xabi Alonso is going to be staying at Leverkusen, as it seems, for another season, you know, who will Liverpool now move for to be the successor to Jurgen Klopp? You know, does it bring other people into the frame who we didn't think would be in the frame until a few minutes ago? The likes of maybe the current Bournemouth manager, maybe Thomas Tuchel could come into the frame. Pep Linders, you know, will there be an attempt to get Jürgen to change his mind? Only time will tell over the next few weeks, but be sure that when we hear some news, we'll be discussing it here on the LFC Red Poets podcast. So on that note, we'll end this edition of the podcast. Thanks to Tom and Pete for joining me tonight. And as you always end the podcast by saying, justice for the 97, don't bite the sun, and you'll never walk alone. Until next time, see you soon.